Come take a dip in our jacuzzi of love. It's the Feast of Fools.
Always wondering how to get the missus into a hot threesome with the nanny.
Or the pool boy.
In love with more than just one guy.
Well, you're in luck. On today's show, we have award-winning author Tristan Tormino talking about her new book, Opening Up, A Guide to Creating and Sustaining Open Relationships.
Tristan interviewed over 100 people about the nature of their open relationships. Find out what she discovered.
Is this another way of expanding your mind or just finding excuses for bad behavior?
Sexual diversity, the myth of equality, and how to keep your relationships hot and fresh no matter how you style it.
Remember, folks, ménage à trois is just a fancy French word for networking. I'm Fausto Furnos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Stay tuned. The Feast of Fools podcast is brought to you by generous support of fantastic, open-minded people just like you.
We really couldn't do this show without your support, so please visit feastoffools.net, make a donation, buy a t-shirt, get a mug.
Your financial contributions help to make the show happen.
Thank you. This gay fun show is also brought to you in part by Steamworks Gym, Sauna, and Baths.
Release the pressure! Saca la presión! Steamworks!
Steamworks is a comfortable and stylish place to meet other men, relax, work out, and play. Open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, to men 18 and over in Berkeley, Chicago, Toronto, and now Seattle, Washington.
When you're ready to play, Steamworks is ready for you.
Visit steamworksonline.com and register to get a discount on your next visit. Enter Feast of Fools on the promo code field to get the special discount. And remember,
play hard, play smart. The lovely Tristan Tormino is on today's show. She's the author of 4 books, including the award-winning The Ultimate Guide to Anal Sex for Women. Woo! And her brand new book, Opening Up, A Guide to Creating and Sustaining Open Relationships, is now available through our website, feastoffools.net. Welcome to the show, Tristan.
Thanks for having me.
You are so lovely, as you are a great author. So why do you wear so many hats? You're a writer, you're a porn director, a sex educator, a columnist?
I like to do different things. I don't like the same thing to happen every day. So, And I can't just do one thing. I mean, I have to get the message out there about sex positivity, and I have to encourage people, and I want to educate them. And you kind of have to do that in all different mediums. You can't just do
it's
it
kind
in
of
one.
Like your love life, right? Or about what you write in the book,
yeah,
about
you,
having
yes,
an
yeah.
open
you can't
relationship.
Just do it one. It's like you've got to do it through multiple channels.
So when would you discover that? I mean, were you always like this? Like, I have always been like this. You know, I had my parents always encouraging us to take like art classes and piano lessons. And,
right.
I mean, was your childhood the same way, or did at one point in your time in your life you discovered that, hey, you know what, I just want to be more than just a writer?
Right. People always ask me this question, like, how did you turn out the way you did? And, like, were you raised on, like, a feminist, hippie commune and all that
bio-engineered
stuff?
Bioengineered?
Yeah, and I totally wasn't. I had a totally lame, suburban upbringing in a mostly white, totally Christian, you know, upper middle class suburb of New York City. And there was like no discussion of sex at all in my house. Mm-hmm. My mom's way of educating me, very WASPy, mm-hmm. which was there were very explicit books about sex. And when they disappeared from the bookshelf for like weeks or months at a time, she didn't say anything.
Oh, because you took them.
Right, I took them. But
to learn
there was,
about them.
Right, but there was no, you know, there's no reaction of any kind.
That's how my sex education was, too. My parents would buy books, stick them in the shelves, and let us discover them.
Yes. And so The Joy of Sex is the first sex book I ever read. It's the first time I ever saw pictures of naked people.
What,
you know, most
what,
people
yeah,
see
how old
Hustler,
were you then?
Like 7. most people see like Hustler you know, Penthouse or Playboy or whatever, and I saw The Joy of Sex. Maybe that had something to do with it, those hairy bushes. And everyone looked happy. I mean, besides the bushes, everyone looked
They're a little cleaner happy. Now in the reprint. Yeah. So people are like shaving, and they're not so hairy and hippie looking.
But there is a sort of a vibe to that book, which is just like, wow, we're having sex.
Yeah, if you pick up a vintage one, it's like the platform heels and the afros and sort of the bell bottoms. Right. Kind of give it away, you know. But what went through your mind as a kid? You saw this, like, adults having sex. I mean, did it ruin you? Did it open up a new way of thinking about your body?
Did you think, I'm going to make a career out of this?
No. And I didn't, you know, there was really not a lot of people doing a lot of sex writing when I was growing up, obviously. Even when I was in college. I mean, now in college, there's like a sex columnist at every college newspaper.
There is?
Yes. At places like Tulane and, you know, University of North Carolina. Yeah, there's a sex columnist at the student newspaper.
I had no idea.
I got to re-enroll in college.
And the thing is,
back to school, that kids.
That totally was not going on when I was in college at all. So I think I went to a really liberal place, Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. I mean, super lefty, political, queer, crazy queer. You know, we're like one of the first universities to have like all gender dorms before, you know, way before these other fools signed on, you know, 10 years later or whatever.
And Wesleyan's not like a Methodist school, is it?
Founded by John Wesley. It began life as an all male school. People always confuse it with Wellesley.
Is
it all girls? I'm like, no, it was all men and Methodist until 1971 when it went co-ed. And it was just a really sex positive place. My very first serious girlfriend really initiated me into, you know, the ways of sex positive, sex radical.
She was a mentor
feminism.
To you.
Yeah. I mean, she
was
I
she
did,
older or she just had a
yeah,
different experience?
Yeah, she was 2 years older than me, and she was like the big dyke on campus. And I was basically straight until I started dating her, right? Like, I had fooled around with some girls and I had a little girlfriend, a brief girlfriend, but it wasn't.
She's like, you're pretty.
And then it was like, you know, she takes, you know, it's like, then people see us together and they're like, wait, who the fuck is that? Because they're that's the big dyke on campus and that's her girlfriend? Where did she come from? Because I wasn't like in the community or like in the GLVT organization or anything. I came out of left field.
So you've done your own Kinsey study where you interviewed polyamorous people.
Yeah.
How did you find all these people?
Okay. On the internet. Where
so you
else
went
do you
online?
Find?
So
well,
you just
here's
Googled
the thing.
Like polyamory
well, here's the thing.
Couples?
I mean, everyone, almost everyone I know personally in my social circles is probably having some kind of relationship that's not traditional, that's alternative, that's not monogamous. But I really wanted to get beyond that. You know, I wanted to get beyond this sort of queer, kinky, San Francisco, LA, New York crowd. You know, I could talk about that for days. But I wanted to know, what are people who are in an open marriage who live in Oklahoma doing? And what about people in Minneapolis, women who have two husbands? You know, like, I wanted to get totally outside of my own experience, my own social circle, and really hear the voices and the stories of people who are totally different from me.
How many people did you interview?
I interviewed 126 people.
My God.
And all, you know.
And how many of them did you sleep with?
Oh my gosh. No one's asked me that. Let me just hang on.
Oh, she's going to be honest.
Because you actually met face to face with 80 of them.
Yes. But some of them obviously I knew before that. Let me just think about this for one second.
Wow. She actually.
I would be like, I'm not answering that question.
I'd be like,
question.
I am a scientist first.
Well, that's kind of several of them are friends, but I've not slept with any of them.
You know, you kind of inspired me to do a study on hot guys and their habits of hot guys.
I'm going to write that book.
I've slept with a lot of people, but no one in the book.
No one in the book.
Really?
That might color,
distance between you two.
What'd you find out? What did you discover about, you know, middle America, or that couple in Oklahoma that's polyamorous?
Right. Every single person is creating their open relationship in a different way than everyone else. You know, I think that the stereotype out there is that there's monogamy, you could be a swinger, or you could be polyamorous. And this image of polyamory has a specific look to it. You know, everyone's friends, they're a little bit crunchy granola, everyone's kind of bisexual, right?
Bob and Carol, Ted and Alice.
Yeah, exactly. So That's not what it's like at all. It's really all over the board, and it's so specific to the people involved. So the one thing I learned is that while there may be some trends and some sort of commonalities, everyone is really, really unique, and they're making the rules for themselves.
Okay. So, like, what kind of rules are they making?
Oh, my God, it varies so much.
Like,
I mean,
what's an example?
Things like no sex with other people besides your primary partner in the bed that you share.
Oh, interesting.
Or no kissing, or maybe no anal sex, or I don't know.
There was one, like, no geography, a sort of geographical thing, like no one who lives in our hometown. As long as you're outside the city limits of where we live, it's fair game.
Doesn't
but no one in our
like
hometown.
A way of sort of like organizing sneakiness?
No, because you're not sneaky.
Because
you're not
you're
sneaky
being
at
on
all.
The level. Well, yeah,
absolutely,
it's
you're
sort of
totally
bringing
honest.
That desire onto the surface.
And what people want to know is also different. There are people who, like, I want to know that you're going to hook up with someone beforehand. Like, you can't touch someone unless we talk about it first. Other people are like, use your judgment, but I want to know as soon as it's humanly possible for you to tell me.
And then I'm sure a lot of people don't even really care who the other person's sleeping with.
Right. It really runs
or
the gamut.
Don't tell
I mean,
me
there
anything.
Are people who told me, I want to know as much as you're willing to share with me. I am nosy and I want
me.
The details. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, isn't this whole thing like all good fun and games until somebody gets hurt? I mean, it's like if somebody brings home a venereal disease, then you'd be like, you slut. How dare you? You know, well, I thought we were going to have an open relationship. Here I have chlamydia or gonorrhea, you know?
You know, it's interesting because even the people I talk to who claim to have no rules, like they say, no, everyone's allowed to do whatever they want. There doesn't need to be a check-in. There's
no
veto power.
Decontamination period.
Well, here's the thing. Everyone said, even when they said they had no rules, that everyone practiced safer sex. I mean, it's really big for people. It's important. It's at the top of the list of what people talk about when they talked about their agreements.
But notice you're using the phrase safer sex. It means there's always a risk of catching something.
Oh, of course. There's always a risk. There's
so
always
like
a
if
risk.
You caught crabs from some, you know, from your group marriage, I mean, how does those relationships work out?
Well, you know, there were some people who violated safer sex agreements, but no one caught an STD unknowingly that I talked to or that would tell me. Again, this is all self-disclosure. Mm-hmm. They can tell me whatever they want to tell me.
So what kind of questions did you ask them?
God, I mean, I first just got basic background, where you're from, what your job is, what your age, your sexual orientation. And then I wanted to know how they characterized their relationship, because some people identify as polyamorous, polyfidelitous, non-monogamous, open relationship, open marriage, monogamy with benefits. I mean, it went on and on and on, right?
Benefits,
swingers.
Yeah.
I mean, so and people, people identify as monogamous, who answered my survey, who either had a polyamorous partner or who was polyamorous and was transitioning to become monogamous. So there are actually monogamous people interviewed in my book, which I think is important because it's a choice on the spectrum of relationship choices.
Because I would imagine that, you know, being monogamous is, you know, for a lot of people, it is an okay choice and they're very comfortable with it.
But I want people to make it a conscious choice.
Right.
I think too many people right now are monogamous by default.
Because of social pressure?
That's what society expects them to do. That's what their parents expect them to do. That's what their brothers and sisters and their friends and their peers are doing. They don't choose it. They just fall into it, and they're like, "Okay, well, this is what we're doing now."
Now, the people that
we're
you
being monogamous.
The people that you interviewed, were they mostly gay or bisexual, or were they straight people?
No,
mostly?
All over the board. Let's look at the statistics, shall we?
She's gonna pull them out of the book.
There's a lot of lesbians and polyamorous relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Or gay
and
men.
Gay guys. Okay, so.
So what page is this? So people have the book.
338.
338 in opening up.
Okay, so 66 women. And 50 men, 10 people who identified as transgender or other. And then down below that, 48 people identified as bisexual, 47 as straight, 24 as gay, lesbian, or queer, and 7 as pansexual or omnisexual. Because people could write in their sexual orientation or their gender. You know, those are write-in.
Because people don't like labels, do they?
No.
They don't.
Well, and really, like, all over the board in terms of geography, I mean, we hit a lot of different states. Also, 50 people, 40% of the sample, had children. That was a really important topic of discussion that we talked about.
So it's married people.
Yeah, and lots of people were married. And so, and the breakdown was pretty much between the West, the Midwest, the South, and the Northeast, almost equal.
So who funded this study? I mean, did you just pay for it out of your own pocket?
Yeah, that would
be
me.
So you were like traveling around the country meeting with these people, or?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, you know,
you get around a lot, don't you? I mean, physically. Physically. I'm not trying to impugn
I do travel a lot. So right. I have an opportunity to talk to people. And there are people who I couldn't reach who I talked to on the phone. So everyone did the written survey. And then from the written survey, I would do a second interview, which was either by email, by phone, or in person.
So okay. What are you hoping to change in people's perceptions on polyamorous or fluid sexual relationships by your book and by doing the study? Because you're kind of like a modern day Alfred Kinsey.
Wow. I mean, obviously, I don't have the sample that Alfred Kinsey had. You know, he had an amazing, huge sample.
You could continue. I mean, are you going to continue talking to these people?
But I'm not a sociologist. But the thing is...
You could. I mean, a sociologist is somebody who labels themselves.
Yeah, you just have to get one working for you. Okay. That's all.
I just feel like people, there's still a lack of visibility, a lack of awareness, a lack of education. I mean, this is a minority. It's a minority group. Most of the people who practice it are closeted about it for good reason, for a lot of good reasons.
Jobs.
Children, custody, you know, just peer support. You
neighbors.
Know, people getting kicked out of their church or, you know, not getting a promotion or whatever. I mean, there's all these forms of discrimination that people can face.
Well, let me ask you, too, about if you're in a, let's say I'm in a relationship and we're monogamous and I want to broach the subject of opening it up. But, you know, a lot of relationships are viewed as sacred. And how do you even start the conversation about opening up your relationship?
Yeah, like the straight guys are listening to the show. Right. They want to go say, how do I convince my wife to get into a hot threesome with the nanny?
Yeah.
Right. Well,
how do you bring that up without the other person freaking out?
Yeah.
I would imagine that's a very common thing.
It depends on what
thing.
You want, too. I mean, there's the hot threesome. There's the occasional sex party. Mm-hmm. And then there's like, I want a husband and a girlfriend. I mean, there's a wide spectrum going on of what people want. Mm-hmm. I think people have to start out in pretty neutral territory. They can say, you know, I was listening to this podcast. This crazy lady was on there. She wrote this book. What do you think about open relationships? And get a sense, you know, test the waters there rather than say, I want to have an open relationship with you now.
Well, but how do I convince them? The response is going to be, I don't know. What do you think?
No, we can't have that
response. Because it's always like, you know, coming out as a slut, you sort of have to like jump into the pool first.
Right.
In a sense. And then be willing to be shamed and humiliated by those around you. And which is always like sort of discouraging.
Yeah, but I think you've got to own the idea that you want to do this not because there's something wrong with your relationship. See, I think people have all this baggage and all these insecurities. So the minute someone comes to you and says, I was thinking we should go to a swingers party. I was thinking we could open up our relationship. Immediately the other person, if they're insecure, is like, wait, you don't love me. I'm not good enough. I'm not enough. You know, and these are all just stereotypes and myths that have basically been shoved down our throat by society and the media that says that like there is one true love and there's one soulmate and that person should be able to meet all of your needs.
Right.
And
well,
if they
we're raised
don't,
on this.
It
it's kind of like that fairy tale of, you
Absolutely.
Know, Cinderella or Snow White. I was telling Fausto, I said, we should come out with some polyamorous children's books where,
yeah,
you know, Snow White gets rescued by Prince Charming and, you know, Princess Charming too.
Yeah, or Snow White and the dwarves, you know? And the dwarves can have other partners as well. They're not just like all about Snow White.
Are you saying that Snow White bagged those dwarves?
I'm saying we could rewrite the story. I'm saying we can always explore the subtext.
Maybe there's a subtext already in those stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
So, I mean, you're saying there's the myth of equality.
Yes.
What is that?
This is a big problem. Well, equality is something that like we all sort of strive for. It's almost unconscious at this point. And partly that's because of the women's movement. And it's like, hooray, great. Mm-hmm. Like we all want, I want equal pay and I want equal treatment as a woman, right? But I think that there's this idea that you want to be equal to your partner in your relationship, regardless of gender, regardless of sexual orientation. You want to be equal partners.
What does that mean?
I just think that people have this idea that that's what makes a good relationship.
Everyone's, like it's 50-50. Yeah. We decide this, we decide
exactly.
that, and stuff
we
like that.
We all have a say, and we all contribute, and you know, everyone, no one loves anyone any more than the other one loves them. And I just feel like when you start to open your relationship, again, you need to custom design it for you guys. So if, for example, let's just say you and I are in an open relationship, okay?
Oh, how hot.
I'm hot for that.
Okay. And here's the thing. You like to have romance.
I do.
You like to have boyfriends.
I like to get flowers.
And you like to sort of court and date and go on trips and you know, just... and
then when I'm not doing emails, that, I like to get fisted.
Okay. Love emails. And I like to go to sex parties and have sex with strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if the rule was you can only have sex with someone once and never again,
yeah,
that would work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't work for you.
It wouldn't work for me.
Because you want to date the people. You want, a boyfriend experience, girlfriend experience, right? You want to date and romance.
But what happens if I go on a date and then you're left alone at home to take care of the kids?
Well, she's probably at the sex party.
Well, again, I think that stuff has to work itself out.
So
I mean,
it's a scheduling issue.
Well, I think this is kind of a theme, though, in a lot of, S&M type relationships and, especially in, the leather community. What did I say, M&S?
S&M. No, I'm just wondering. I was like, S&M. What is S&M?
Well, because they always talk about the power exchange, and mm-hmm. it's not always an equal level. And sometimes you have a dominant person in that relationship, mm-hmm. or you have a submissive person in that relationship.
Well, are we saying also by the myth of equality that all relationships by nature are unbalanced? If they're not equal?
I think they are, but
maybe the word unbalanced is not a good word to use.
They're not equal.
Complex.
Again, they're. I want relationships to be respectful. I want them to be fair.
Because always somebody's going to be earning more money than the other one. That's not balanced.
Exactly. That's not mm-hmm. balanced. And you can't say that someone is giving to the relationship the same amount of money, time, energy, spiritual focus, whatever it is.
What happens if you're in a polyamorous relationship and one guy's an oaf? And you guys everybody in the group, Well, there's five people and there's that one oaf and everybody's like, I thought you were into him. No, I thought you were into him.
That sounds like a communication breakdown. Okay. That sounds like it's time to renegotiate. Yeah, if there's confusion.
Because I have friends who were in a group marriage and that's what happened.
Really?
Yeah, for some reason, they wound up with some guy and they were like, this guy's
where
a big old oaf.
Where did he come from?
What's he doing here?
And they got torches and pitchforks.
Well,
and
he must have started out on having some good behavior.
And then she wound up with a French massage therapist. But that's a whole other story.
Okay.
Here. Okay. So what, what do you think about the study that shows that GLBT youth, now more than ever, are wanting to get married in monogamous relationships mm-hmm. and have kids
by the age of 30?
Yeah, by 30.
Wow. I would say that the mainstream gay and lesbian movement has won.
Right now.
What I mean? I mean, in other words, there was a big push post Queer Nation, post mm-hmm. ACT UP. We went in a totally other direction.
After the 1990s and struggle with HIV and AIDS.
Yes.
And the radicalism.
We had the sort of Human Rights Campaign Fund. We all just want to be like you. We want to have Subarus and we want to have kids.
Was that George Bush's America?
Subaru?
And so part of it is this sort of mainstreaming of gay and lesbian America. Part of it is, I don't know about you, but I feel like the entire country has shifted to the right.
George Bush's America.
I went to Wesleyan in the mm-hmm. 90s, we did intense activism. By that, I mean, when people protested that we still had investments in South Africa, they firebombed the president's office.
Wow.
And I just feel like now when I go back to Wesleyan and I speak, there is certainly political dialogue and there's certainly a level of activism, but it is nowhere near how radical it was. And this is probably what our parents say, because when they were protesting Vietnam, it was even more radical. So I feel like if you look at the 50s to the 60s, 70s, 80s, we're moving to the right, I think, as a group.
But certainly not on the internet. The internet is the most liberal thing. It's like...
Right.
I'm conservative compared to everybody else. It's
right.
But don't you think this is growing pains?
But there's something happening.
There's something miraculous
about the desire to get married and have kids for gay people, and here's why. Because when my dad, who was gay, came out in 1972, he could not imagine a life as a father who happened to be gay and had a kid. And he could...
It was impossible.
Your father came out when you were 1 year old.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. And he couldn't imagine really a lot. And now I feel like... And when I came out, I certainly couldn't imagine that we would even be on the brink of having the right to marry. No. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have... If you polled me then, I would have said... No.
No way.
Marriage,
it's not going to happen. And I think that there was this, notion that when you come out as gay, you sort of lose all these things you're never going to be married. You're never going to have children. These sort of boring stereotypes. So for kids to want that, they think then they can get it. Mm-hmm. And that is the positive part of that study.
Because they will get it.
That's the positive part of it.
Do they
there's
feel
still
that,
a conservative element to it.
And,
yes, and that they have a sense of entitlement that I never had, and that certainly my father's generation
but
never had.
But I also think, though, that children are going to instinctively want to recreate the relationships that they see before them, and so a lot of these kids see, you know, a parent that's married, or maybe they eventually had gotten divorced and stuff like that, but they think to themselves, it's going to work out for me. And so they might not necessarily be presented with, you know, having an open relationship, because, I mean, how do you raise kids in an open relationship? How
well,
do you teach
can.
A child about that?
You can absolutely do it. I mean, I have an entire chapter on parenting, and that's because, like I said, a big section of the people I talk to have kids. And I think, quite frankly, you have to be appropriate and you have to be honest. You have to be appropriate because you have to determine how much impact does my open relationship have on my kids? Mm-hmm. In other words, am I going to go to like a couple swingers parties, like, you know, 3 times a year and hook up? Fine. The kids don't need to know. Am I right now married to a woman and then I have a boyfriend and he's going to move in with us? Yeah, we need to have a sit down with the kids. You know what I mean? This is like something that affects the kid's life. So
but
I think
there's a lot of people that live in that kind of relationship, aren't
absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. And I think kids who are born into it, they don't know any different. They're like, I just have three parents at home.
The kids are extremely well adjusted. Yeah. And then in a lot of ways, they always, my friends who have kids, they said that their kids actually are really happy because when it's time for their birthdays or Christmas, because it's five people all earning income on their own jobs, it's like five times as many
parents.
Well,
and it's five resources. The other thing you have to realize is the more role models, the more people to talk to, you know, there are people who you can confide in, and then there's people you can talk to about your schoolwork, and there's people you can talk to about boys or girls.
It's like having aunts and uncles.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
It's adults in your life.
It's adults in your life. So who cares what the relationship is?
I always grew up thinking my mother was, without knowing, was in a polyamorous relationship because she was, of course, married to my father, and then she'd see Robert Redford or Paul Newman on television. She would always refer to them as my boyfriend Paul Newman, my boyfriend Robert Redford. And I remember saying to her one day, I'm like, gosh, Mom, you have a lot of boyfriends. And she's just like, well, they're not really my boyfriends, I just like to imagine.
So that would be hot.
For the young people who are listening right now, they're asking Tristan, I really would like to be married in a relationship because that's what I dream about, this is what I desire, this is what I hope. What do you say to them?
I think everyone needs to find their way. And whatever it is they want to do is good with me. I don't want to be one of these people who is telling people that an open relationship is more evolved, is better. I think that...
But do you secretly believe that?
No. No, I don't. I don't. Some of my best friends are monogamous. And I say that...
I love how you say
as
that.
...as a joke. But also, but I'm also serious about it because I find them to be, you know, incredibly radical.
That's usually
political.
The response people do when they say, you know, some of my best friends are black or gay.
So the thing is, like, I think that there have been polyamorous people who sort of turn their nose up at monogamous people, like, oh, isn't that nice for you, monogamy? You haven't seen the light. And I think that's total bullshit because if my message, and this has always been my message with sex, and it's certainly my message with the relationships, you need to figure out what it is you want and then you need to go out and get it. And if what you decide that you want is monogamy or marriage or kids, then who am I to tell you that's the bad choice or the wrong choice? You got to make your choices.
Our guest today is Tristan Tormino. She's the award-winning author, columnist, pornographic film director, and occasional actress. And she has a fantastic new book called Opening Up, A Guide to Creating and Sustaining Open Relationships. It's available through our website, feastoffools.net. You can get it into your hot little hands. Is this available as a Kindle?
Yes, they're doing it now. It's not quite available, but they are doing it now. My publisher let me know. Soon available as Kindle. And you know what is great news, too?
What?
The Ultimate Guide to Anal Sex for Women is being converted to Kindle as we speak.
Ooh.
So you can read it like on the subway.
I know. I can't wait. So let's read a little bit of passage from your book about new relationship energies. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you.
Sorry.
No, take your time. It's all right.
Well, I want to talk about a common issue for people in open relationships, which is something called new relationship energy, or NRE. I didn't coin the phrase. Someone in the 1990s did, named Zahai Stewart. Well, it was like the mid-80s. And then it's been sort of picked up and used by polyamorous people. Essentially, NRE is that state when you first are attracted to someone or crushing on someone, and you're a little bit out of your mind. Like, all you can think about is them. The chemicals in your brain. Yeah, infatuation. The chemicals in your brain are just, like, going overdrive. All the good, happy chemicals. Everything revolves around them. It's like, when will I see them next?
And this, you smell them on your clothes.
You're just overwhelmed, right? Yeah.
Are you listening, Van Man?
So the problem is, when this happens, you can get distracted by this person very easily. And the people you're already involved with are like, hi, I'm still here. So I'm going to read a little bit about coping with new relationship energy.
So this is for someone who's in a relationship with somebody else.
Right.
And one of their partners fell in love or discover a new person in the relationship.
But it could even just be, you know, a hookup. It could be a crush. It could be a sex partner only. But still, you're crushing. Okay. Non-monogamy veterans recognize NRE. They know it's a phase that will eventually pass, and many just ride it out. Even the most experienced among us can feel frustrated when a partner is caught up in the dizzying world of a new fling or relationship. The key to maintaining your sanity is patience. Allow the person who is in NRE the freedom to ride the high. Just caution him against making any significant decisions during this period. Okay, so this is the, like, I'm so in love, I want to get his name tattooed on my ass. I think I should move across the country. You think I should lend him $3,500? Maybe we should move in together. You know, the totally insane stupidity that you're in.
But they believe it.
And with Mark and I, never ended.
So remind him that he has other commitments and not to neglect them for this new person. A common conflict that occurs when the partner of the person who's head over heels attempts to offer an objective perspective, perhaps expressing concerns about the new person. You know, this person is grounded and experienced, and sometimes they can see drama coming a mile away. But the fool for love can't see anything negative and accuses his partner of being jealous and possessive.
You're just jealous because I have a hot new lover.
Right. So this is why it's important to know that you're in the midst of the NRE haze. Mm. You've got to acknowledge it. And so then I want to...
This is true for people in monogamous or straight or gay, any kind of relationships.
Right, right.
It's about the newness of the relationship.
Right. And so there's this great quote from someone I interviewed who said... Okay, well, first, there was Colin. Colin is in a polyamorous relationship. And he said, when I was first involved in my first poly relationship... the first one outside my marriage, I was really excited about it and I wanted to do lots of crazy and romantic things. I wanted to go camping with my new partner, for instance. My wife was unhappy. She said, "We never go camping." It was a slow and somewhat painful process of figuring out how our marriage of 5 years at the time had become static and complacent. I value what we learned because we have a more active primary relationship now, but it was really uncomfortable to go through.
Okay, Mark, I'll go camping with you.
So that's a lesson there, though.
I would never take you camping.
So can I just say one thing that's distracting me? Do people tell you look at like
all
Chris?
All the time.
No, okay.
Chris Knopf.
Mark looks like Chris Knopf. It just hit me like a ton of bricks, and I was like, he's just a dick, by the way.
He is in real life?
In real life, I've met him several times. I find him to be totally abrasive and an asshole.
Why?
He's listening to this right now, and
it's okay.
His feelings hurt.
It's okay. Chris. We stopped talking a long time ago.
Okay, good. So, but the lesson here is, in some ways, he said it was painful. He admitted that. But
Chris
he also,
Knopf is
no.
This.
What?
We're back.
I'm
to,
so
we're back to Colin.
Okay. Yes.
He said it was painful, but he learned that, you know what? I had been like neglecting my relationship, and this sort of burst of energy I got. Why not try to spread the burst out? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Especially when you're crushing, your sex drive goes through the roof. Okay, so focus that not just on the new partner, focus it on the existing partners. You have to sort of spread the love and the energy rather than just keep it like tunnel vision to the one person.
But isn't it sometimes like new relationships are like candy bars? You just want to gobble it up all by yourself.
Yeah, but you've got to learn how to balance those things out if you're going to be successful at open relationships. You know,
and what if you fail at them or not?
Yeah, well, I mean, how does one fail at an open relationship?
Well, in all sorts of ways, and in some of the same ways that we fail at monogamy, there is cheating in open relationships, and by that I mean people make specific agreements and then they violate them. So, you know, so just because you make an agreement doesn't mean someone's going to follow it. Hopefully, you will. But certainly there are people who told me about breakups they had where they explicitly said, here are the rules. We're in a four-person quad. And if anyone in the quad wants to have sex with anyone outside the quad, they have to get the approval of everyone else. And then one of the quad members goes and, like, fucks the next-door neighbor. I mean, this is a true story from the book. This is a true story. And
seems
they were
like
all
a lot
like
of trouble.
And they were all like, what?
Why not just be single and just date a lot of people?
Then you're a solo polyamorist. I call that something.
In other words, everybody else.
No, because there are people.
So all of Lakeview.
Here's the thing. Just like the whole marriage and monogamy is this thing that we're all supposed to sort of aspire to. Beyond that, we're all supposed to aspire to being a couple. I mean, everyone wants to be a couple. Everyone wants to find the one. And there are people out there who don't want a primary partner. And by that, I mean, they don't want to live with someone. They don't want to make serious decisions with someone. They don't want to co-parent with someone. They don't want to mix finances with someone. However you define primary partner, right? Mm-hmm. And that may be a temporary state. I'm in grad school. I want to concentrate in grad school and then I'll have a relationship.
Because I mean, it's like,
but
you know,
it could be permanent. Yeah. People, right. There are people who just
I've
don't
made that decision
want
in my life.
Parent.
I'm like, I don't ever want to be with anybody ever again.
They don't want to, they don't want a partner.
Is that, you talk about me?
And that's okay. And then, but they're dedicated to polyamory because even when they're not doing primary partners, mm-hmm. they're always going to have multiple partners. Those are going to be secondary partners or casual partners or not committed partners, but there's always going to be more than one. And that's why they're a solo polyamorist and not a single monogamous person.
Why do you think so many people who are wanting binary, I guess, relations, traditional relationships, why do you think they have such an adverse reaction to hearing about this type of discussion?
Wow, this has been, you know, a surprise, actually. There's just been some...
Because people get visibly upset.
People get really angry.
Yes.
And,
you were on a talk show on another station, and they were
and,
calling
and
gay
people.
Guys,
gay people, which, again, I made the incorrect
accusing
assumption.
You of destroying the fabric of society.
Yeah, and I made the incorrect assumption because they're gay, that they were like going to be a little bit more hip or liberal to the cause. The thing is, I think that people strongly try to defend this institution, which has been around
Defense
for
of
a
marriage
long time.
Act?
Yeah, hello. And they cling to it. So part of it is just clinging to this thing. But I also think that when someone's presented with the idea of an open relationship, if they feel insecure about their own choices, if they are unsatisfied with monogamy and they're living it, it causes them to question all these things. Well, if they're doing it, maybe I could do it. Why am I not doing it? What's holding me back from doing it? And they get, and people don't want to ask these deep questions of themselves. They really don't.
No,
so they turn it back around and they get really, really defensive.
Because it's like that bully mechanism, because the bullies don't ever want to have you see their insecurities. So that's why they lash out at you.
Right. And so it's like they're defending marriage as the greatest thing in the world because they don't believe that really, but they have to, because why else are they doing it?
I mean,
you know,
marriage
I mean?
Is sort of like going to Disney. It's fun, but it's not for everyone.
No.
You know, and
right.
It is a fantasy, and it is sort of like an artificial creation. But, you know, it can be very comforting, just like eating burgers and fries are, but then after the meal, you're kind of upset, you know. But. Okay, so a kinks, I'm into a kink, and my partner is not. Like, if I want to get you know, getting shit on, and my partner's
really?
Like...
Really? We have to go there. Let's just have a little bit of a more user-friendly example. Let's say you have a foot fetish.
Well, what about? I mean, I'm trying to create something really extreme.
We like our scat jokes
if
here.
If you have two girls, one cup.
You've seen it. Oh,
hasn't seen it? Come
Some
on.
Some people haven't.
Well, I mean, that's another topic. But
okay.
If I'm into an extreme sexual fetish, and my partner isn't, how do you balance
that? But see, I don't want to, here's why I don't want it to be extreme.
Okay.
Because this is like the stereotype that you're going to be raped by like this strange boogeyman who jumps out of the alley.
Ooh,
where
please.
We know that most people are raped by people they know, or there's acquaintance rape and all that stuff. So the reason I don't want it to be extreme is because I think people should be able to identify with the scenario. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say
I have that on my list here. Vanilla
you two are involved. Okay.
Yes.
You're a couple and you come home one day and say, you know what? I saw this movie and there's all this bondage and I'm really into it. I want to try it. You want to try it? And you say, actually, no, I have no desire to try it. And I'm being supportive of you, honey. I just, not my thing.
I don't want to get whipped and beaten.
Right. Well, or just tied up,
or
just restrained.
Tortured.
So you make an agreement that you can go explore the bondage with someone else, and you can make some guidelines like bondage only, bondage and a hand job, bondage, you know, bondage but no anal sex, bondage no kissing, whatever it is, bondage on the weekends, whatever your rules are. And then in some ways, it's actually very structured. Because the whole point is you're only going outside of your partnership mm-hmm. for bondage.
Okay.
And because it's bondage, there's all these kinky people out there who already maybe practicing open relationships and who have very clear boundaries and are like, oh, well, I'm a bondage expert. I like to tie people up. I don't need to be your boyfriend. I don't need to send you like crazy text messages. I don't need to try to break you two up. I just like bondage. Let's do some bondage together.
Because the people in bondage, they know what they're doing for the most part. But do you find most of these people that are into these open relationships, are they looking for that extra kink, or is there a lot of just vanilla sex?
It's both. It's both. I think it's easier when there's kink involved, because I do believe that kinky people are better organized, and they're just organized. Mm-hmm. They're better organized of saying like, hey, I want to do daddy little girl with you. Let's not do it with anyone else. And then it like keeps that in a special place, and it's mm-hmm. very clear what everyone's role is, and everyone feels unique and special. And you know what I mean? Kinky people just have a way of organizing these things and naming things and having very specific roles.
Well,
because
you have a culture,
defined.
You know? I mean, yes. Isn't a lot of our relationships sort of based on our communities and our culture?
Absolutely. But I think it's harder for vanilla people because it's harder to say, okay, I want you for this, I want you for this, I want you for this, I want mm-hmm. you for this. It's just, there isn't a language and a structure already in place for that. Of course, that could certainly happen.
Right.
I mean, you could say, you're my husband, you're my boyfriend, you're my boy toy, you're my plaything, you're my cuddle buddy, you're my, you know, hedonism 3 vacation partner, you're my gangbang guy, whatever it is. You know, you could define those, and I encourage people to define those for themselves.
So in your book, you talk about having children in a polyamorous relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Do kids even care about it? What do they need to know?
Like I said before, it depends on what impact it's having on the kids. If you are in a partnered relationship where you have sort of sex buddies on the side, they don't need to know. But if you have multiple partners and those partners are a big part of your life, they do need to know. And then they need to know in age appropriate terms. If someone's 3, you can't say, yeah, we're polyamorous. That means nothing to someone who's 3. Mm-hmm. But it could mean something to someone who's 12.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just important to be honest. And the reason is because there's nothing to be ashamed of. These are the choices that you've made in your relationship. You don't have to feel bad about them. You can explain to people, you know what? There are people at church who wouldn't approve of this and who have different ideas or who might be judgmental. Don't stand up in church and tell people about this. There may
like
be
if
those
you have
conversations.
Kids, I mean, kids love to brag and talk about their parents. And it's like, you're going to say, mommy and daddy are having a 3-way marriage and you can't talk about it at school.
It depends on
and kids are terrible at keeping secrets.
It depends on the kid. I think it depends on the kid.
But I mean, is that a fair burden to put on a child?
I don't think there should be secrets, but I think if there's going to be ramifications for being outed within your community, then you need to sit your kids down and explain that to them.
Because you saw A Big Love on HBO.
Yes.
Okay. And so what do you think about the depiction of that sort of polyamorous relationship on that television program?
Well, the only thing about that
and the
is
family and the kids.
It's they're Mormon. They're Mormon fundamentalists. And so there is this entire sort of shadow over the whole thing of morality and religion, that they're living this way of life and this lifestyle based on their religion. And I would say that like no one in my book would say that. People would say they're spiritual, people say blah blah blah, but they're not
no one
in my book is like is
it.
Mormon mm-hmm. or is, you know, or is polygamous.
Well, what did you think about like when
but
that
the depictions
guy got,
yeah, if I took all that out, which it's kind mm-hmm. of the major plot points, you know, the mm-hmm. crazy family and the compound, but if I took all that out, I do see a really positive, complex, nuanced depiction of an alternative family. But why does it have to be in Utah with Mormons? That's my problem. And secondarily, why do none of the wives have the opportunity to have additional partners?
Well,
it's very one-sided.
That was a plot of one of the shows. She started developing a very close friendship with one of the neighbors, and the other two sister wives got jealous.
Mm.
But I mean, you know, polyamorous sort of are persecuted in the news. I mean, there's mm-hmm. a guy who was arrested in Utah for having a polygamous
again
relationship.
different polygamy and polyamory, totally radically different.
Is the difference?
What is it, you know?
Okay, so polygamy is also the wrong word for it, but it's fine. Well, but that's the term that's sort of been used.
What term would you like to use for that?
It would be the polyandry, actually, because polyandry means a man with multiple female spouses or partners.
Okay.
So yeah, it's just the wrong term. But anyway, polygamy, as it's been used as a term, are these husbands with multiple wives. There are definitely, it's all shrouded in following, you know, the teachings of Joseph Smith and being this fundamental Mormon, right? So it's all shrouded in this religion. There are major issues around consent. Many people who've left the church have said that they were coerced into these marriages. There is definitely child abuse. When you are 13 and you're forced to marry someone and have sex with them and reproduce against your will, that's child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and why are we just persecuting abuse and exploitation as opposed to poly?
Right. So I think that these two things, they're literally radically different. Mm-hmm. The only thing that brings them together is that it's an alternative family structure. But there's so many more issues going on with that. Polyamory is like adults, first of all, adults, and they're all consenting. They're all coming to the table saying, these are the relationships we want to create. It has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with some guy who's the prophet told me I have to marry this other guy. It's none of that. It really isn't. So I feel like people confuse the two, and it's bad.
Where would you like to see, I mean, the Americans' opinion on these types of relationships in the future? How would you like to see us change? Or are we already accepting enough as it is?
No, I don't think we are at all. Well, first of all, we've got to get gay marriage, you know, passed and through, and we're not even.
So do you think like getting gay marriage is the first thing, so that way other people that are not, you know, in traditional relationships can open up? Are we like the front runners of this kind
of
alternative
lifestyle?
Well,
yeah, in some ways. And I feel like gay people are ahead in terms of just where we are in the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that there's been a strong enough polyamory movement. And for many reasons, that's because there's not a lot of visibility. What? And so...
Who are you talking about?
I'm sorry, I can't say her name.
Oh.
Well, you just outed somebody.
Oh, okay. So I feel like there needs to be more activism, more visibility. And ultimately, I just think people need to respect other people's choices.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is really about building family. It's about commitment. It's about love. It's about sex sometimes, too. And that's totally great. But just because my relationship doesn't look like your relationship, why can't you just sort of let me be?
Our guest today is Tristan Taormino. Her brand new book, A Guide to Creating and Sustaining Open Relationships, is a comprehensive guide about polyamorous relationships.
And all kinds of open relationships, not just polyamory.
Well, what else? What else other kinds is there?
Well, well, that's the thing. Is
open
that
open relationships meaning?
I mean, I talk about partnered non-monogamy, mm-hmm. which is different from polyamory. I talk about swinging. Talk about polyfidelity.
So, open relationships is the umbrella.
Is the umbrella term for
okay.
me? Yeah, polyamory. I think is too limiting.
Now, you direct porn.
I do.
So, like, how did you directed House of Ass?
Yeah, don't
is that
you
for
love
real?
That? It's for real. Oh my god, do I need to send it to you?
Oh well, yeah, absolutely. We'd love to get a what copy. Is House okay. of Ass?
Well, House of Ass was my first sort of experiment into reality porn, and it's actually morphed
reality porn.
Into this new series called Chemistry. So okay. let's just forget for now and go to Chemistry.
Okay,
House
Chemistry.
Of Ass is like an experiment.
Okay.
So the idea behind Chemistry, which I do for Vivid Entertainment, is I take a group of porn stars to a house for 36 hours.
Men and women.
They're like on lockdown. There's no TV. There's no newspapers. It's like Big Brother in that way, right? And
oh, it's like a Big Brother, but with all the sex
yes,
documented.
And like the real world. So we have multiple cameras. We film everything.
Give me
we
that.
Have a confessional.
Wow. And porn stars by nature are typically very, very horny and sex stuff.
The
people.
Ones who love their jobs.
The
I only really like to work with people who like sex. There are people right now who are having sex for the money
I
and
like
for a lot of other reasons.
I like this guy who's wearing okay. the tiger outfit with a chihuahua. I hope it didn't
yeah.
get let too me see. Kinky.
No, it wasn't that kinky, but there is a tiger. There's a furry fetish
really?
Scene.
That's really
there's
entertaining.
There's a guy with a tiger.
So
and
there's
he gets
a plot development. There's drama. There's
what happens is there's no schedule and there's no script. They get to decide who they have sex with, when, where, what they do. And then they come in the confessional and tell you why.
Is there some good gay stuff going on?
Unfortunately, no.
So the women didn't get on with each other?
The women get on with each
Tristan.
Other, but the men don't.
The men are all straight, and they're like, no, I'm not going to do that with
Except
you.
Except in Chemistry 2, one of the people I cast does straight porn, gay porn, and tranny porn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge taboo. in the straight porn community.
To do tranny porn?
To do anything but what you do. You can't cross lines. You have to go straight and you're straight. You have to go gay, you go. You can't cross over. There's all this homophobia and all these double standards.
You should stick a trans guy and a trans chick inside there just to surprise everybody.
That would be, that'd be quite a surprise.
Oh my goodness.
That, we're getting there. We gotta warm up to that.
I'm totally like, I love this concept. I hope that you continue doing the more and more of these. How can somebody get a hold of it?
Chemistry, you can buy at your local video store, or you can go to my website.
Blockbuster?
No, like your local adult video store. And here in your hometown of Chicago, you can get it at Early to Bed. You can get it at Tulip.
Wow.
Stores like that.
Mm-hmm. I had no idea they even sold porn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just thought there was a dildo store.
There's dildos, but there's a small selection of porn as well.
Fantastic.
And on my website, puckerup.com.
Now, you are a winner of the Feminist Porn Award.
I am. Is it? No, I'm a winner of three Feminist Porn Awards. I just like that.
How is it possible to be sexy and not be sexist?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. What does it mean to be a feminist porn producer? Because there's women who are listening to this, right, and they're just going to be like, how dare you?
Sister,
right. Well, for me, here's the thing. Once you make a video and you put it out in the world, you can't control how people respond to it. And there are people who are going to be like, that's the hottest thing I've ever seen. And someone could sit next to them and be like, that is the most fucked up, degrading thing I've ever seen, right? They're sitting right alongside each other.
Like this
so
podcast.
So for me, basically, making feminist porn is about the process. I want the process to be fair. I want to have good working conditions. You know, at one time, feminism and the labor movement were really connected and really closely joined, and they're not necessarily anymore. But that's a big part of it, the work environment. I want people to be safe. Everyone's tested for STDs and HIV. And I want people to be a part of creating the representations. I have no interest in telling people you're going to do this, then get in this position, then do this. It's like, well, what's going to make you come?
But that's a lot of negotiating, though, isn't it?
Yeah. That but was, if you have a negotiation fetish.
What does that just drive
fetish?
You crazy? I mean, lesbians love negotiating.
Yeah, we love the process.
It's all about consent.
It's a process. Mm-hmm, process.
It's a process, E-word. But if you make people part of the process, I think it makes for really hot scenes, a lot of spontaneity, and people can be themselves and relax and show you how they really get off, not these sort of artificial ways that we constantly make these porn stars, you know, perform and behave in these ways that are fake.
That's so exciting. I can't wait to watch Chemistry.
Okay.
It won't turn me on, but I just like to see
You'd
the
be
awkwardness.
Surprised.
Really?
It would be.
That's not
true. Plus, boys get it up the butt in Chemistry 1 and Chemistry 2.
From whom?
Girls.
Because Fausto
they put on a strap on. Yeah. I want to see the cocks flying in the guys' faces, though. And they're like, you know what would be really interesting? If you set it up so artificially, or, you know, because when you're creating reality, everybody knows that reality television is really seeded with little
scripts. Yeah.
Do you do the same thing?
No, not
yes,
at all.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
You can tell me.
No, I really don't.
To the show right now.
No, I think that there's a couple things that I do that are probably borrowed from reality television. Certainly, I shoot like literally 50 hours of footage. And I boil that down to about 3.5 hours.
Okay.
That's a lot. That's another thing lesbians like to do.
Lesbians
edit video.
So one thing that I've got to do is I've got to watch it and figure out like what the stories are. So in other words, like in Chemistry 4, Penny Flame, who's one of the actresses, she requested this guy, Johnny Sins.
Yes.
New guy on the block, only in the business 5 months. Saw him on a set. Thought he was kind of hot.
I want to see who she's talking about.
You know, thought he was kind of hot. Yeah, on the back.
Point to him on the thing, on the front.
This is Penny right here. And
okay, she's a brunette.
Johnny right there.
Oh, Johnny's kind of thuggish.
Yeah. He's a little bit white thug.
Love me some thug loving.
Okay, so she sees him on a set. She's attracted to him. She's like, I can't wait till I get cast with that guy. So she requests him. Like, I ask people, who do you want to be in the house?
Yeah.
You know, so I know they're kind of... So they've never hooked up before. And she's kind of got the hots for him. And we get to see them in their very first scene, the very first time they have sex.
Now, and you're there, and you're there doing what?
Shooting with the camera.
So you're with the camera.
Yeah.
Do you talk to them, or do you just like quietly disappear in the background?
I kind of let them do whatever they want to do, and then I bring them in the confessional, and I talk to them later. So I usually talk to them before and after.
Afterwards.
Yes.
So you're not, are you throwing an apple of discord into the mix, just a little for fun?
No. One thing I don't like is I ask people about who they like, and then I ask people about who they hate. Like, who do you not want to be
like,
on a set with?
I don't want to be around this person at all.
Yeah, and sometimes they've worked with that person, and sometimes they're just like, she's a bitch, you know? those people I don't put together. That's like a kind of drama I'm totally uninterested in when mixed with sex.
Because you want to be pro-sex.
Yeah, yeah. I just want everyone to like each other.
Well, when, isn't angry sex sometimes a turn on, though?
These people have sex for a living every single day.
So it has to
be.
Are
they really working every day?
Yes,
doing this?
Yes. Some of these guys work twice a day.
Wow. That's
twice a day, and they come on command.
That's a lot of cum.
I could never be a porn star. I mean, it's just a lot for that of aspect.
Don't they
like
do
the
little
lights.
Tricks, though, like shoot their balls up with like Elmer's glue to come out or something? I don't know what it always
no,
looks
like. No, here's the thing. The pop what? Shots are all real. They don't fake pop shots.
Did
you
really?
Either got
them
it or you
seem
didn't.
Seem very spontaneous, though.
Well, they edit it. They edit it, you know, well, but those pop shots are real. There's no like Cetaphil soap. There's no these weird like pina colada mix. There's like these weird fucking stereotypes out there. It's not true. I've been on a million porn sets. I've never
think by
seen
now
them
they
fake
could just
a cum
digitally,
shot.
Digitally enhanced.
Certainly,
it or
some of
like
them
that.
Are on Viagra. Not all of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them do injectables, mm-hmm. Which is sort of the generation before
Ooh.
Viagra.
Right.
So
and
yeah, but a lot of
can
them.
Can you be honest with me? Though, are any of these guys like taking Viagra on the set or anything?
Not that I know of.
34
not these
hours.
Three.
I mean, you gotta
not
sleep.
Not these three.
Sometime.
36 hours. No, and that's the thing hours. Is like the guys have to take naps. The girls keep going and going.
So they're
and
like,
going, and going.
Oh yeah.
The guys like, dude, I gotta take bandits. A nap, and the girls are like, okay, get that.
Any thought
vibrator.
About putting, you say you also are an actress. Any thought about putting yourself into the mix of this reality?
No, listen,
experience?
I did my movies in 1999. Yeah. Last time I checked, it's 2008. My time is coming
gone.
Good, girl. My time is coming
gone. You
can
still do it.
Yeah,
you
can that's still sweet. Do that's it. Sweet. But that's,
what I'd like to see you and Chi-Chi LaRue in a porn together.
I would suck his dick like you have never even seen.
I would too. I would suck Chi-Chi LaRue
you wouldn't.
For porn.
You'd never suck mine again after that.
With a condom on it.
With a condom on it. And he's
well,
pro
maybe
condom.
With condom.
He's pro safer
yeah,
sex.
He's like, wrap.
He's
what
great.
Do you think about Chi-Chi LaRue's public service announcement, screaming into the camera in drag, wrap it up.
Have you seen it?
Yes. Listen, I think Chi-Chi LaRue is trailblazer, is groundbreaking.
You got to watch what you say because he knows where the bodies are buried.
Mm. I really, truly believe. I mean, the things that he's done, the fact that he has millions of people referring to him as Chi-Chi and sometimes as she, I love. I mean, he mm-hmm. really fucks with gender.
Sure.
And people in porn, as a general rule, don't fuck with gender, like at all. So I just applaud Chi-Chi for that. And Chi-Chi also used to direct straight porn for Vivid for many, many, many years.
Okay, so what do you think about the PSA? Do you think it's really encourages people to use condoms or not?
I don't know if PSAs work. I mean, do we have any research on that?
See, my personal opinion is it's great public service announcement for Chi-Chi LaRue, but mm-hmm. it's not very good
oh.
for encouraging people to use condoms. And if you really want people to use condoms, get the porn stars to do the PSA
yeah.
and say, dude, I just love
this is
like
how you
coming.
Put a condom on.
Yeah, you know, dude, give me that yeah.
Those
PSA.
Are in my sex ed videos. See, besides chemistry, I do a whole sex ed line ah. for an imprint of Vivid called Vivid Ed. And we do a whole safe sex thing in all my videos. How to put a condom on, how to suck dick with a condom, all that stuff.
So quickly, you put a column out. And the Village Voice is
yes.
it weekly?
It's bi-weekly.
Of course.
It's called Pucker Up. And I've been doing it since 1999. Again, you've
been working the sex angle
a
long time.
You
okay?
write, you work, you film. I mean, it's like, I really have to salute you. Now, your famous uncle, Thomas Pynchon. What does he think about your work?
You said that as if it was an Asian name or
I know,
something.
I'm
really
so
funny.
Terrible. Pynchon.
Who we only know from The Simpsons.
Yeah, that's the only way people know
him. He's a guest
spot
on The Simpsons. Really funny. No, he's a major figure in American literature.
Yeah.
So before The Simpsons.
So you send him your video.
I do. I've sent my
videos.
I have.
What did he
and
say
we,
to you?
We exchange. We have a birthdays very close together, so we always exchange cards. He's very supportive. You know, he's a really smart guy, and he's also really into pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he appreciates it. I don't know how he feels about porn. I don't know if he's a porn watcher. I don't know any of that. But I know he appreciates my movies as a form of pop culture. I know that.
So what did he say to you? I mean, it's like, I mean,
he
you
said
know.
It was a really cool idea.
I think it's
a
really
was a great
cool
idea.
Idea.
Yeah.
So any like work on collaborating with him on a porn video?
You know, he's got his hands full with those 900 page books.
I know.
Yeah. And I couldn't afford him, quite frankly. Not even to.
But do you think you he know. Might be interested just for fun?
No.
Well, he doesn't get photographed, right?
He isn't doesn't. That,
well, he can
he
write like a
he
script.
He can do whatever
or
he wants.
Or Tom.
And I don't think I'm high
Thomas
on his list.
Pynchon's like porn
he
video
said
would be
Asian,
exciting.
He said in a weird accent.
Pynchon.
Again. Pynchon.
Pynchon. Pinchon. I apologize.
You're like, Pinchon. It's like Bichon Frise. You're like, you're basically rhyming it with a word it doesn't rhyme with.
I think it's sort of be interesting, though, the fact that you guys have this kind of relationship, you know? It's like,
he's
something
wonderful.
To explore.
Very smart.
So shout out to you, Thomas. Nature of fandom, your fans, when they meet up with you, since you're so know about sex.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
polyamory and yeah. all this
I mean,
kind
is
of
it
stuff.
Awkward?
You must
or
be hit on all the time.
Yes and no. A lot of people are intimidated by me. So I think that they're not like overt about that. Certainly a lot of people flirt with me, but I wouldn't say I get hit on left and right. And then there's like also crazy people, you mm-hmm. know, with bad boundaries who are like, well, here's the thing. When someone comes up to me, when somebody comes up to me and they're like, basically, you know, I read your book. It changed my life. I can now admit to my wife that I love to get fucked in the ass. Thank you so much. I'm like, more power to you. But
he looks at you like, hey,
no, no, no.
Hey,
but then the second part of that is, I read your book. It totally changed my life. I can now admit that I want to get fucked in the ass by a woman and I want it to be you.
Ooh.
See, so it's like, you know, it takes it that one step further. And the thing is, I'm happy to say, you know what? I'm so super psyched for you that you're able to articulate your desire. I encourage you to like get that desire met. It's not going to be with mm-hmm. me.
But here's my restraining order.
Most people will walk away. And then there's like a handful of people who are like, what do you mean? I'm like, okay, see, now you need to go. So it's all just like degrees. It's all a spectrum of people. Most people are incredibly well behaved.
So bring your A game when you hit up on Tristan.
That's right. Bring your A game.
Bring your A game. Okay, we're going to do something we don't do too often. Breakdown 2008. What's your favorite color?
Oh, me? Purple. Yes.
What's the best thing that's happened to you recently?
I didn't have my tambourine here, sorry.
I had sex with my partner in Palm Springs.
Oh.
Ooh.
What's the worst thing that's happened to you recently?
I look at my partner who's in the room because I have...
Oh, he's looking
he's
over
like
here
like... He's like my brain. Like, he's like, you know, what's the worst thing that's happened to me recently? Someone was mean to me and said some mean shit about me behind my back
I'm
that
really
got back
sorry.
To me.
Oh.
You know.
I'm really sorry.
She's
I
a bitch. Biatch. Okay.
Okay, how do you like your toast?
Oh, not burned, but firmly toasted, like well toasted, and a shitload of butter. There
really?
Can never
You're
be enough
butter.
Oh, yeah, fucking spread that on.
Where do you feel most comfortable and happy?
In my study at home, on my purple chair with my Boston Terrier, Jordan.
Oh. What's a song you heard recently you really enjoyed?
I recently heard Tainted Love again, and I can't get enough of Tainted Love or the 80s.
Love it. Name and species of your favorite childhood pet.
Dog.
What's your best feature?
My boobs.
You have nice boobs. Where do you want to be in 5 years from now?
Fiji.
In Fiji?
I want to be in Fiji on an island with no people.
Wow. What's the biggest misconception people have about you?
That I'm a horn dog.
Mm. And you're not?
No.
What turns you on in another person?
A big dick.
Ooh. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be?
Over there.
I would not be addicted to chocolate.
Who made a big difference in your life?
Every teacher I've ever had, including my English teacher in high school, my thesis
Say her
about
name.
Mrs. Tabor and Professor Claire Potter at Wesleyan and so many teachers.
Okay. What makes you mad?
People who lie.
How should we get out of debt?
Oh my God. Orange savings account.
Okay. Okay. If your vagina wrote its own monologue, what would it say?
I don't have anything to say, but you should ask the person in behind me, my ass.
If your ass wrote its own monologue, what would it say?
I lead a charmed life.
What is your greatest weakness?
What is my greatest weakness? Chocolate again. I think chocolate.
Do you play any musical instruments?
I played the viola for 6 years in high school. In school. Yeah.
So what are you going to do right after the taping of this? You're going to...
I'm going directly to women and children first.
To feminist bookstore
book
right
store.
Here in the heart of Andersonville.
Yes.
Support your local booksellers.
Tell them Fausto sent you, and they'll go look at you like this. Huh?
What?
Who's
that? And what happens to us when we die?
Wow. Oh God, these are really hard questions. And you're like firing them at me.
I know.
I just really hope I get to see my dogs.
Aww.
All the dogs you've ever had.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to look forward to. Maybe. We want to thank you so much, Tristan Tormino.
Thank you, Tristan.
Thank you. I didn't know I was going to get those questions.
I know.
Hard.
We just flaunt them out on people sometimes.
Okay. This idea is to sort of get into your subconscious, mm-hmm. you know.
And unprepared. Did you?
I think I've got to know a little bit more about
you. We just like to ask what your vagina would say if it said it's a monologue.
Talk to my ass.
But it's like, talk to the ass.
Talk to the ass.
Her book, Opening Up, is available everywhere right now through our website, feastoffools.net. Support independent podcasts and independent writers like Tristan Tormino. She's a fabulous, fabulous
puckerup.com and openingup.net, my two websites.
Puckerup.com, openingup.net. Good domain names.
Thanks.
So remember that the Feast of Fools is also brought into you in part by Steamworks, Gym, Sauna, and Bath.
Release the pressure.
Saca la presión. Steamworks.
Steamworks is open 365 days a year to men 18 and over in Berkeley, Chicago, Toronto, and now Seattle, Washington.
When you're ready to play, Steamworks is ready for you.
Visit steamworksonline.com and register to get a discount on your next visit. Enter Feast of Fools on the promo code field to get the special discount. And please remember,
play hard, play smart. So always let your conscience and your heart and communication be your guide. Is that good advice? What do you want to leave the people with, Tristan?
And play safe.
Play safe.
Play safe.
You know.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. I would pay.